Blog Talk Radio.
Can anybody out there hear my voice? Does anybody out there really care for a missing child?
Good evening, everyone. You are listening to Voices for Justice tonight, November 3rd, 2010. I'm your host, Michelle Bart, and tonight we continue our journey through modern-day slavery, other known as human trafficking. We're live tonight from all corners of the United States, Arizona, Washington, D.C., Pennsylvania, Washington State, and Oregon. Our guests will be taking your call shortly. The call-in number is 347-838-8622. The chat room is also open. Log on to blogtalkradio.com/helpingheroes and click chat. Before we begin, if you or someone you know is being trafficked, whether sex or labor trafficked, please call the Human Trafficking Hotline at 888-37-37-888. Our guests tonight include the helping heroes in the fight against trafficking. We will speak with Sarah Jekyll, the Associate Director of Polaris Project, Lori Blair, the Senior Director of Program Services at Seroptimus International of the Americas, Sharon Fisher, the President of Seroptimus International of the Americas, Marty Cook, the Chair of Imagine Life Without Violence, the committee chair for Seroptimus International Northwestern Region, and Alice Wells, president-elect of Seroptimus International. For our listeners, please get to know these great organizations. Their websites can be found on our Blog Talk Radio page, but if you have a pen handy, their addresses are polarisproject.org, seroptimusinternational.org, seroptimus.org, and nwcat.org. We welcome our guests this evening. Good evening, ladies.
Good evening.
Good evening. Welcome, welcome to Voices for Justice. Sarah, let's start with you. What is human trafficking and what's it looking like here in the United States, as well as how big is this problem?
Sure. Well, thank you very much for having me, Michelle. I'm definitely excited to talk about this topic and so glad to see so many different actors looking at it and addressing it. Human trafficking is something that occurs in every part of the United States. It's not an issue that happens solely abroad. It's not something that happens only in Southeast Asia or other parts of the world. Human trafficking is a form of modern-day slavery, and it means individuals who are forced to engage in some kind of labor or forced to engage in commercial sex against their will. So they're being forced to do something that they don't want to do, and they don't have any recourse to exit the situation. So we see people who are recruited, who are deceived, who are physically or psychologically abused, and they're kept in all different kinds of industries and places throughout the United States, whether they're being forced to provide direct commercial sex, maybe they're working in a factory, in agriculture, in a restaurant, or even a domestic servant who is working in a home.
So Polaris Project, I like to think of Polaris Project as the national arm on the front lines of this war, such as John Walsh is with the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. Tell us a little bit about the Polaris Project and what all services and efforts that you have going on over there.
Sure, I'd be happy to. Polaris Project is one of the largest anti-trafficking organizations in the United States. We have local programs operating in Washington, D.C., Newark, New Jersey, and also a small program in Tokyo, Japan. And then we have our headquarters office located in Washington, D.C., where we do a lot of our national programmatic work. So we work on policy, on both federal anti-trafficking policy and also state-level policy. Currently, there are 44 different states that have some type of anti-trafficking law or criminal provisions on the books. We also run the National Human Trafficking Resource Center, which is the national hotline for the United States. We take calls 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, We have trained call specialists at the ready to take calls from, you know, everyday Americans, from victims of human trafficking who might need help, from service providers who are looking for referrals. We also do direct client services work, which means we work directly with victims of human trafficking in the Washington, D.C. and Newark, New Jersey areas. And in those programs, we're providing transitional housing to victims. We're doing day-to-day case management for victims, providing job training, ESL classes, really everything that an individual needs to get back on their feet and to be able to rehabilitate and to move on with their lives. So we
How long have
you
all been around? Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, sure, no problem. We've been around since 2002. And we do a lot of training at the national and local levels. We travel around the country. We do training via phone, in person. But a large part of, you know, this issue is really educating and making people aware that this happens here and that it's not just in big cities, but in, you know, small and medium-sized towns all across America, and that, you know, every citizen has a role to play in fighting human trafficking.
So obviously, to get that message out there, especially if you're in 44 states, we still have a good number of states that still need to get something on their books. But how important are the collaborations to help carry your message and carry the information throughout those communities across the country?
It is, you know, incredibly, incredibly important. Over the last, you know, 8 years that Polaris Project has been working on this issue, we've seen immense amounts of growth in the grassroots community, in different types of coalitions and task forces and collectives and collaboratives that are working to fight human trafficking. And particularly in our role operating the National Human Trafficking Resource Center, we've taken an average of 1,200 calls a month since we took over operation of the hotline in late 2007. We've taken over 23,000 calls. And when those calls come in, we need to be able to bounce that back to the folks on the ground, to the people in every different community, whether they are providing services, whether they're law enforcement that have been trained on this issue, whether they are coalitions that are raising awareness, whether they're working with student groups to get the word out. All of those things are key to us being able to serve and protect victims of trafficking in the United States.
So, Sharon, let me ask you then, as president of Soroptimus International of the Americas, what and who are Soroptimus?
Soroptimus International was formed in 1921, actually, in California in the United States, so it's quite relevant to this conversation. It's a club-based volunteer service organization. The word Soroptimist, by the way, means best for women, loosely translated, and we think we are the best for women. Our mission is improving the lives of women and girls in local communities and around the world. And this particular issue of trafficking is very near and dear to our hearts, because trafficking, the number one victim in trafficking, of course, are women and girls. And it is such a vital part of the interest that our membership is showing, because this is such a horrific topic. So we're excited to be involved in it, not so excited the issue exists, but with crime itself having gone somewhat global along with the economy, it's become an issue that if it's not addressed soon and very aggressively, we all, every community we live in is affected by this issue, and we have to start aggressively, and we have to get involved in it. And Soroptimist has about 3,000 clubs in many thousand more communities around the world that we can mobilize on this topic, and that's the strength that we have to bring to this. We do a lot of education and awareness in our own membership. We have programs at the club level and at our federation level for trafficking. We see these victims, we hear their stories, and it's near and dear to our hearts.
And Lori, with Soroptimus of the Americas addressing sex trafficking And being that we represent, I believe, 19 countries in our federation, how are the efforts encompassing other countries in addition to the United States on the trafficking issue from our federation level?
Yeah, you were correct. It is 19 countries and territories that we represent, from Seroptimist International to the Americas. And we found that a lot of clubs all over the world are very active and working on this issue. We've had a lot of clubs in Brazil that have been doing awareness raising and working with governments and also police stations to raise awareness and to provide services for women. The Philippines, the clubs in the Philippines are very active. It's obviously a large, huge problem in the Philippines. And they've done a lot of really fantastic work doing coalitions between governments, police agencies, and also corporations and businesses, all working together to fight trafficking. We have had slower starts, I would say, in places like Japan and Mexico, where they're particularly concerned about the organized crime that's responsible for the majority of the trafficking. There's definitely a fear factor there that the clubs are you know, concerned about getting involved in the topic because they're worried for their safety, which is completely understandable. We're a general organization. We address a lot of women's issues, and this is just one of them that's important to us. But we did have a club recently in Mexico, or actually the region in Mexico, that's distributing the cards that we have that say the new face of slavery and give you some background information, but have taken the Seroptimist information off of the cards so that they can raise awareness but without necessarily alerting the criminals to who's doing the awareness raising.
Sarah, do you find that much of your advocacy efforts tend to put you and your staff and volunteers in harm's way as well?
You know, we take conducting outreach very seriously. At the moment, Players Project does not do a lot of direct outreach, which would be in the context of a street or other direct formats. We do a lot more community outreach at the moment. But certainly for anyone who is, you know, engaging in any type of outreach, whether it be to farms or other individuals, there's a lot of protocols that need to be put into place. Working in pairs, you need to have the right people with the right background to be able to engage both culturally and linguistically in a particular community. You certainly want to maintain safety for yourself and also for the individual. Sometimes handing someone something that has, you know, for example, National Human Trafficking Resource Center on it, could actually put them in danger. So using, you know, discreet outreach materials, like Lori just mentioned, is a great idea. You know, having information there that shows that you're willing to help. Sometimes we've seen people use compact mirrors. We've seen things go out on Band-Aids or bandanas that were going out to farm workers. There's a lot of different ways to provide someone with something that has a number on it but maybe isn't labeled with the organization or more information. It just sort of says, you know, to get help or to access help and has a number there. So there certainly are dangers, and it's important for, you know, everyday citizens and community members to be cautious. We certainly don't ever encourage folks to, you know, engage in any type of investigative action or, you know, to be looking too deeply for these things. We really want people to be our eyes and ears and to call the hotline. And there's a number of hotlines in other countries as well and other places that you can reach out to for help, but we certainly want to, at that point, get law enforcement and others involved to be able to move forward.
This past year, I know that Oregon State passed a law that any place that serves liquor, whether it's a bar, a bowling alley, to a grocery store, or a liquor store for that matter, need to put up the human trafficking hotline number sticker in their establishment somewhere. Do you know if that's been successful in the state of Oregon?
You know, we've definitely seen an increase in the number of calls that we receive since some of those postings have gone up. And there are a handful of other states that have done similar mandatory posting laws. The first and the best example was the state of Texas, and we saw huge increases in the number of calls coming in. And granted, Texas is, you know, a large state, and our volume from there is high anyway, but we've seen a direct correlation between the posting of the hotline number and the number of calls coming in and then the number of tips resulting from that and the number of people accessing help and accessing services. So we've certainly seen an uptick in Oregon, and it's definitely something that we are pursuing actively in multiple other states. because we think it's, you know, it's a really good tool for getting the number out there and getting folks to call into the hotline.
Let's talk a little bit about the red flags and the potential indicators of human trafficking, whether sex or labor trafficking. What are you finding, and is there a correlation between the United States and the kind of trafficking that takes place in other countries? Are the red flags similar, and what can people look out for?
Sure, I can definitely take a stab at that. I think that there's, you know, there are absolutely a lot of parallels between the types of red flags and potential indicators that we look out for here in the U.S. and what you can see in other countries. If an individual isn't free to leave a job or to come and go as, you know, he or she wishes, that's certainly a red flag. If you see in the context of the U.S. and in some other countries, an individual who's under 18 and is providing a commercial sex act, people who are paid very little, perhaps they're paid infrequently, anyone that's working, you know, 7 days a week or excessively long or unusual hours. A lot of the cases that we see, a debt is a really big red flag for trafficking, and this is certainly something that we see play out throughout the world, where someone is coming to a place to do a particular type of job and they have a debt that is sort of never ending, that the debt's always growing and they're never actually able to pay it off. A lot of times there's false promises. Someone's told that they're going to be a waitress and then they're forced into prostitution or forced into a brothel. Perhaps they're told that they're going to be doing some kind of child care, but they actually end up being, you know, enslaved in a home, being fed very little, not having access to leave, and not getting the type of conditions that were promised to them. So it takes a lot of different factors together, and, you know, each of these indicators or factors on their own is not 100% representative or indicative of trafficking, but when taken together, you know, they certainly can be.
Definitely. Alice, as president-elect of Seroptimus International, our bigger organization, when did Seroptimus International take on the issue of trafficking, and how is the organization addressing the global epidemic throughout our organization with all the countries we represent?
Michelle, we started tracking this in 2008 through our program focus database, and we have had over 1,000 projects that have been submitted through this database under the objective of ending human trafficking and all forms of violence against women and girls. And through this, clubs are raising money to help put into the prevention of trafficking. We have raised over $1 million to combat trafficking. And according to our records, over 1 million women and girls have been helped throughout the world as a result of Seroptimus efforts.
Wonderful. And you said those were reported on the program focus report. So clubs
Correct.
That aren't reporting, so it could be twice
yes.
as much as that.
It could be.
Wow.
That's exactly right.
Holy cow, that is just wonderful. I want to remind the listeners, the call-in number, if you have questions of anybody on our panel this evening, the call-in number is 347-838-8622. And if you know somebody being trafficked or you need help, please dial 888-3737-888, the national hotline. Sarah, tell us a little bit more about, I know that the National Human Trafficking Resource Center is a great resource for organizations to obtain materials and fact sheets. I know Seroptimus also has those. Tell us a little bit about how the hotline and the resource center came about through Polaris Project.
Sure. We've been operating the National Human Trafficking Resource Center since December 7, 2007, and that is through a grant from the Department of Health and Human Services through their Rescue and Restore campaign. So the hotline is funded in part by the Department of Health and Human Services and other donors and supporters. It is very much a resource center, so we aren't operating just a crisis line or just a tip line. About 25% of our calls are crisis calls and tips, where we might be engaging about very specific, challenging trafficking situations. However, we also take a lot of calls where we're providing referrals. We might be giving a service provider or a victim access to different service providers across the country so they can access anything from emergency shelter to legal services to immigration assistance. We also get a lot of general information calls from all different types of people, from students to social workers to teachers. We provide a lot of materials, as you said, a lot of fact sheets, a lot of toolkits, and we also do a fair amount of training. So we can do phone consultations with people where we'll actually just do a type of audio training, or we'll give them consulting over the phone to, you know, help them get a sense of how they might be seeing trafficking in their work or what they should do. And then with tips and crisis calls, we're fielding those and we're, again, bouncing those back out to the trained folks in the field that can assist us with those. So we are there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. There's always someone that can answer your call in English or in Spanish. We also have access to a 24-hour tele-interpreting line through which we can access 170 additional languages, although a majority of our calls are coming in English and Spanish. So you can call us for pretty much anything. We can direct you to local resources and places to volunteer. We can give you very specific materials for your profession to help you recognize trafficking. We can direct you to international resources, really whatever you're looking for. We're sort of a one-stop shop for resources.
And Sharon, I know that you reside in Canada. How are Soroptimus and other organizations working in Canada to combat this issue, and what kind of resources are available to you up there?
We in Canada, generally, and our clubs, do a lot of advocacy with the government. And in fact, there was just a new law passed or introduced a few weeks ago where they sort of got it half right. They made it illegal, prostitution somewhat illegal out in the public, which a lot of people are saying is really just driving it indoors. So we're hoping to have some changes there, but I think Canadians have been active in this issue for some time, and perhaps because of the size, we're able to get involved in the sexual exploitation of it with some success early. I think frequently these organizations and club projects tend to be event-driven. They know somebody who had a situation, therefore they get involved in a project to support that. And we've had some outstanding organizations that we support and partner with on this topic. We have numerous safe houses for some of these women to exit to. In my community, I think there's 3 such houses, and it allows them to get out of their situation and reside under a safe roof for a period of time until they can get themselves back on their feet. Lots of clubs will support these women in the interim. It's very, very active in Canada. I would say the issue has been well recognized, and we're moving sort of out of an awareness. I mean, there's still much awareness that has to continually go on, but that public education is now happening. People are accepting. At the very beginning of this issue, most people would say, this is not happening in my community. Mm-hmm. And as we know, that is so wrong. It's happening in everyone's community, little communities, large communities. So I think in Canada, we're doing quite well with it.
This past summer, you had a chance to have a voice against Craigslist in San Francisco. Tell our listeners a little bit about that experience, and what's your take on the fact that even though they say they have taken it down, we know that to be untrue.
This summer, our Federation convention was held in San Francisco, and our guest speaker was a gentleman named Victor Malarik, who has authored a few books on this subject. He's done extensive research, for instance, in Eastern Europe, and he was our keynote speaker, and we were informed that there was a protest taking place in front of Craigslist. And one of our representatives from our organization, myself, and he attended at the protest. And when we arrived, we were told that the front of Craigslist had been painted out that morning, so there was no identifying features on the face of the building, so they couldn't be identified knowing that this was going to be televised. And there was a number of groups like ourselves present, and there was also a few members that had been brought in, prostitutes from that community, who didn't like the fact that we were protesting. Craigslist, their adult entertainment section, was responsible for many, many, many illegal acts, abductions, that type of thing. And there was, there's just been some tragic stories about girls being recruited innocently from Craigslist for sexual exploitation that they certainly were not expecting and did not sign up for. And I think there was about five or six television stations. There are numerous radio stations. And, of course, we were lobbying for them to put some controls on this site, if not eliminate it. Now, my understanding is that they have that they did make some adjustments, but it not enough to satisfy us, certainly.
Oh, definitely not. Lori or Sharon, SIA took a stand this past July also. We're in the midst of passing a resolution on prostitution and human trafficking. What do you all hope that will do to the clubs, or what kind of powerful outcome will we see with passing that resolution, which Seroptimus, we take a stand, but it's very seldom we take a stand so loudly like that, and that was probably the most memorable thing at the convention this summer for me.
Lori,
Sharon,
do you want to
Sure. I think that it was just part of a Seroptimist evolution of understanding about human trafficking. And when we launched the Seroptimist Stop Trafficking project in 2007, we were very clear to make a distinction between trafficking and people who are prostitutes by choice. We didn't want to confuse those two issues. But as we did more research about the topic and learned more and made connections with people like Victor Malarek and the Coalition Against Trafficking in Women, what we really came to discover was that those distinctions between trafficking and prostitution were false in most cases. In the United States alone, the average age that a girl enters prostitution is at 13. And I don't think that there's anyone that's going to argue out there that she's become a prostitute by choice. And the majority of women who are prostituted, between 89 and 96% of those women say that they'd like to get out, and they can't because they're being controlled by someone else or by their poverty or by the need to feed their children. And the more that we thought about it, the more that we realized that these things are all just tangled up together, and they all are caused by the same thing about gender inequality and about the demand for paid sex with women and girls, and that we needed to address the demand side. And when you're talking about the demand side, whether you're talking about women who have been prostituted or women who have been trafficked, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter to the John who's paying, and it doesn't matter to the woman. All of those women need to be freed, and they need to have access to services that will get them out of that life. And so we decided to take that resolution. The board of directors decided to take that resolution to the convention this year in San Francisco. And after a great discussion with Victor and some questions and some feedback from the floor, the attendees, we were able to put that resolution out to the clubs. It's now out in a mail ballot, and we should hear back. We will know in December whether or not it's passed, but I think that we all think that it will. And I think that for us, that just, it breaks down some of the barriers about what we're discussing, and it lets us really discuss what's going on and target the demand side and start educating men and boys and women and girls that women and girls aren't a commodity that they can be bought and sold, that you can't just spend money and rent a woman's body for an hour and then that's okay and you can move on and never think about what happened to her or what her story is. And I think it also helps with law enforcement as well. I think there are way too many times that women in this situation are arrested and nobody asks questions. Nobody looks any further to see whether she's quote-unquote there by choice or if she's being forced. And if we get into a situation where that's not an issue anymore, then we can better attack the issue and hopefully make some real differences in the lives of not just women who have been, quote-unquote, trafficked versus prostituted. We can be working for all of those women at the same time.
So how can some of our listeners listening to what Soroptimus has going, and as well as Polaris Project, what can listeners do to make a difference and get involved? Lori?
For me, I think the first step for anyone who's interested in this topic is being educated. I mean, I think that there's just so many people that they hear trafficking or modern-day slavery, and they're really not sure what we're talking about, what kind of numbers we're talking about, what kind of situations. And so obviously both Polaris Project and Soroptimist have tons of information that's available on our websites that they can learn more about it. And then the goal is to talk about it to people that you know. You know, to raise the issue in your family, with your friends, with your coworkers, and as our president, Kathy, has said, you know, talk to the men and boys in your life and talk to them about what their attitudes are about women and girls and what their attitudes are about prostitution and strip clubs and things like that. It can be a really uncomfortable conversation. It's not one that we're used to having. But it's been my experience when I've had these conversations with the people in my life that they've never really given it a lot of thought. I mean, that pimp culture and that prostitute culture is just so something that we're used to. We've all seen Pretty Women, you know, we've all seen, like, Pimp My Room or whatever those things are, and we just accept it as part of what goes on every day. And we need to help our friends and the people that we know challenge those ideas and those things that are just part of how we've grown up, and start thinking about it in a different way, and start thinking about the fact that really what we're doing here is buying and selling women and girls, and there's no situation in no country in any part of the world where women and girls should be for sale.
Sarah, do you have any comment on that question?
Sure. I think that, you know, that's absolutely exactly where we want to start, getting educated, really understanding the issue. I think one of the challenges is that this is such a diverse issue. When you talk about all of the different types of labor trafficking and all of the different ways that sex trafficking and forced prostitution can manifest, we're really talking about a huge number of venues and industries. We're talking about U.S. citizens, foreign nationals, children, men, and women. It's not just an issue that affects a certain population. It affects all different kinds of vulnerable populations. And I think that, you know, educating ourselves on the diversity of the issue is really key. I think putting, you know, the hotline number in your cell phone, making sure that you're calling when you're seeing something, giving out information at, you know, different community events that you're at, whether it's putting up the hotline flyer or some other type of informational materials, inviting your friends over to watch, you know, a human trafficking movie, having a discussion about it. We've seen a lot of people do really successful book clubs where they can dig into any number of books that are out there, whether it's Victor Malarek that was mentioned earlier or a number of other authors, and then really have, you know, an insightful discussion about it. I also think there's a lot of room for advocacy, getting in touch with your legislators and really understanding what are the different types of legislation happening in your state. And what can you advocate for? I know the discussion earlier related to Craigslist in Canada and all of the events that happened surrounding Craigslist here in the United States in the early fall and September. Although the adult services section of Craigslist has been shut down, a lot of those online advertisements have just shifted to other places. One of the main places being Backpage.com. It's a very similar site that has hundreds of explicit erotic, you know, advertisements for women and girls for sale. And there are also 250 Craigslist sites around the world that have erotic services sections that are doing the same thing. So I think there's room for, you know, advocacy at a state level, but also internationally as well.
Do you think that passing laws like the state of Washington, I believe we have one of the most stringent laws in the country where we actually prosecute the Johns, do you think that that's an avenue that could be successful if we're arresting the folks having sex with most likely underage girls, then the selling will slow down?
I think that, you know, absolutely, as was addressed earlier, we need to address demand. We can't be incarcerating women and letting Johns who are purchasing commercial sex go free. There need to be more stringent penalties. There need to be a lot more education, as was also mentioned, with, you know, the men and boys in our families and our networks and our professional groups. But I think that certainly, you know, decriminalizing women and criminalizing men who are purchasing sex is the avenue that we need to go. And I think that the interest and the sort of momentum behind looking at demand in this country is really reaching a peak. I think in the last year we've seen a lot more events, a lot more conferences, a lot more foundations and agencies and groups getting involved in the questions surrounding demand. And I think it's, you know, equally important to think about the demand for cheap labor and what that means for supply chains. There's, you know, a very recent and prominent bill that passed in California that makes companies look at their supply chains and look for slave labor in their supply chains. And I think consumers, you know, need to be educated about the types of things that they purchase, and individuals need to be educated about what demand for commercial sex looks like and how that fuels the sex trade.
Definitely, because that, everyone thinks it's just sex trafficking, and a lot of people domestically think it's internationally, but it's right here in our backyard. And we're also talking labor trafficking, which much of the coffee and cocoa fields are being an issue these days as well. But Alice, let me ask you, from an international point of view, as president-elect of Soroptimus International, are there any international projects on trafficking that are supported by SI?
There are a number of wonderful international projects that are going on right now. There's the Purple Teardrop campaign that's taking place in Northern England and parts of Europe. And this is where it's an awareness campaign where Soroptimus are selling purple ribbons to raise money, just to raise awareness about trafficking. We have a great program going on right now in Moldova, which is called Hopes and Dreams for Everyone. And as many people realize, Moldova is one of the poorest countries in Eastern Europe. And because of this extreme poverty, women and girls are being sold into trafficking. This project really began with boarding schools, and it was a way to provide these girls with life skills, career guidance, health care, and especially mentoring on how to deal with violence at home that they've experienced, but even more important, how to get a job when they get out of school. And it's because of that lack of a career or being job ready, many of these girls have been forced to go into prostitution. This program also helps to support those young women who are sold into trafficking but were able to find their way back home again. So it provides counseling as well as mentoring and a lot of support. So we have programs actually worldwide, Michelle, that we're involved with and just helping to raise awareness and helping to try to turn the tide.
Turn the tide, definitely. Let's talk a little bit about legislation, Sarah. What is being done on legislation issues? And not to go into too much, but how does last night's election, you know, impact Polaris Project's efforts on trafficking laws, funding, and the support that is so vital to getting a hold of this issue?
Sure. You know, certainly trafficking and slavery is a bipartisan issue. We have, you know, legislative champions that fight for this issue on both sides of the line. So I think that, you know, people like Chris Smith and Carolyn Maloney are still there to really stand up for this cause, along with, you know, a lot of others working at the state level and also at the federal level. You know, as we focus on the challenge of the economy and what this presents, we really need to think about how we're going to continue to protect the most vulnerable people and the people who are marginalized and the people who are at the highest risk for this crime. But I certainly think that, you know, there's a lot of federal support for this issue from a number of different agencies. There's a lot of action happening at the state level. We're coming around on the reauthorization of the Trafficking Victims Protection Act, which had its 10th anniversary this past Thursday. It was signed in 2000, and, you know, sitting in a group of about 100 people last Friday in the Great Hall of the Department of Justice, listening to the successes of the past 10 years, certainly, you know, hasn't all been easy. But the infrastructure in the United States that's built up to fight this issue is very much present, and it is, you know, we're prosecuting cases at the federal level. I think on the state level there's a lot of room for implementation. We do have a lot of laws that are out there on the books, but we need to be using them more. There are a lot of other legislative priorities that we have. At the moment there is a bill called the Domestic Minor Sex Trafficking Deterrence and Victim Support Act. It's quite a long title, but it's trying to address the crucial lack of funding and programming for domestic minor victims of sex trafficking here in the United States. That would provide, you know, block grants to state or local government entities who can, you know, provide a holistic approach to investigating, prosecuting, but also providing specialized therapeutic services to minors. Through our policy program, we also focus on a lot of different innovative, you know, ways to fight trafficking. One of the big bills is certainly what we refer to as safe harbor bills, which look at decriminalizing minors who are picked up for prostitution, because most folks don't know that a 14, 15, 16-year-old child could be picked up and charged with solicitation, and rather than being diverted to services and being viewed as a victim, they can be processed through our juvenile justice system, and they can be spit back out and then processed through again. So I think a lot of the bills focusing on minors are important. Looking at asset forfeiture, you know, all of the money that is raised, that's, you know, sort of taken off the backs of women and girls, we need to look at ways to get that back and provide civil restitution to victims so that they have something to, you know, restart and rebuild their lives with. So there's a lot of innovative laws out there looking at ways to fight trafficking, but we certainly need to focus on, you know, high penalties and innovative ways to get at the profits and also to provide the many needed services that aren't there.
Lori, how is our, for Seroptimist International, how is our representation with the United Nations, how does that play or has that played a factor with any human trafficking initiatives that we might be trying to have for a voice for these women and girls?
Well, definitely, Seroptimist International is involved at the UN on trafficking issues, especially in Vienna at the UNODC, at the United Nations Office of Drugs and Crime, where their trafficking work is centered. We have participated in a number of conferences and in drawing up guidelines and different things about how to deal with international trafficking, and all of that information is available on the UNODC's website. You know, very similar to what we're talking about the Seroptimist website or Polaris Project on an international level, the UNODC's website is a place to go for a lot of that information as well. They have PSAs, public service announcements, and they have toolkits and information on working with law enforcement and things like that. And Seroptimist has been part of designing those tools and also giving them feedback about the kind of projects that have been successful on the ground. I mean, I think that's really the role that the NGOs have to play at the UN, is to feed information about best practices that are happening in communities around the world, and also getting information from the UN and other NGOs about what's working in other communities and trying to institute those as well. So it's definitely a topic that SI is working on with the UN.
So it's safe to say that Polaris Project and Seroptimist on all levels, our hands are in everywhere in order to make sure that we get control of this epidemic. Is that safe to say?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that we all have the same goal. We want people to live free, And it's important to all of us that we work on this. And it's true that it's such an international issue. President Sharon and I were discussing that earlier today, and it also reminded me when we were talking about shutting down, you know, the old adult services section of Craigslist. And the truth of the matter is if you shut it down anywhere right now, it's going to pop out someplace else. Whether we're talking about the ads on how to buy women and girls, or even if you're talking about a country or a state that's having really great success on combating trafficking or helping prostituted women, chances are all of those people and all of that crime is just going to shift someplace else. So we need to be addressing the issue as often and at as many points as possible, and all working together to try and find solutions, because we have to make sure that what we're doing isn't just shifting the problem someplace else and declaring victory someplace while it's still going on somewhere else. So internationally, even domestically, state to state, you know, Soroptimist started with awareness campaigns, and we will continue those because I don't think by no means have we been completely successful, but we've done a lot. But, you know, we're going to add more. We're going to be launching a new website on December 2nd, the International Day for the Abolition of Slavery, where we're going to be taking a more holistic approach, and we're specifically going to be looking at still raising awareness, but also advocacy, victim services, and prevention, and trying to attack the problem from those four different areas. And I don't mean to – Soroptimist International of the Americas focuses on sex trafficking, but I don't mean to in any way pretend that that's a more important issue. I know that there's labor trafficking. And, I mean, there's child soldiers. There's all sorts of slavery that goes on in the world today. It's just that Soroptimist International of the Americas does focus on sex trafficking.
And I know that Alice and I have had – many conversations also about the labor trafficking and the cocoa fields and things of that nature. So it's just a matter of how we get the information out there too. But every organization, you know, does need to keep focused on one thing. And I know that Soroptimist International of the Northwestern region, one of the larger regions of our federation, is here in Washington. And I'm going to talk for Marty for a minute. I know that she couldn't be with us, but we service five states, Washington, Oregon, Montana, Northern Idaho, and Alaska. And we have over 3,000 members in 108 clubs. And when you look at one of the major corridors, if you will, for trafficking in the United States, the I-5, many of our clubs and the states we represent are on that corridor. And so I know I speak on behalf of Governor Sue Riney and her board that we are doing our part. And a couple years back, for our listeners that would like to get to know what we're doing out here, you can visit nwcat.org. In 2009, we had a couple clubs collaborate. We had three clubs in Washington collaborate together, and we were doing a forum. But when you looked in the audience, it was all of us, you know, Soroptimist members. And when you have James Pond from Transitions Global and Linda Smith from Shared Hope speaking to people that get it, we were losing the opportunity of embracing the communities that needed to get it. So I am very pleased that the region stepped in, and we started the Northwest Coalition Against Trafficking here in the Pacific Northwest. And we, of course, as the chair, I'm going to plug the conference, because many of the people on the panel tonight are actually keynote speakers. So, but January 14th through the 16th, we will be hosting our annual conference in Portland, Oregon at the Convention Center. And it is Martin Luther King weekend. His birthday is on the 17th. And our theme this year is We Have a Dream. And so I'm pleased that Sharon Fisher and Alice Wells and Bradley Miles from Polaris Project will be among the 30-plus speakers that we have throughout the entire weekend. But one of the things that we've decided to also embrace as far as an empowerment structure, if you will, is getting the media empowered, getting the media to take ownership and say enough is enough and make sure that the women and girls remain the victims and not be re-victimized, as we saw in many cases like the Lawrence Taylor case, where the runaway was more victimized through the media for coming forward. So we've established the Jane Velez Mitchell Journalism Award, and we have many applicants, and she will award somebody. But the whole objective with this award is to recognize a journalist or a reporter that keep the women and girls a focus point in their messages to their audience and the public. And so, but by keeping the principles that we as Soroptimists have. So that is one way that our region is taking a leap as a publicist by day. I'm a Soroptimist by night. We definitely see that without media, it's going to be harder to get this under control. But media can be your friend or it can be your enemy. And in this case, we want them to be the friend of the victim and not re-victimize them. So that will be part of the conference. And other partnerships and other speakers will include Daryl Hannah. Many people, even at our committee meeting, had indicated why Daryl Hannah, but not many people knew that she funded her own undercover documentary and helped rescue 14 girls in Cambodia. So we'll hear from her story. We'll hear from Bradley Miles and Sharon Fisher and Alice Wells and our own Sue Riney, as well as Linda Smith, and our recent collaboration, if you will, with Attorney General Rob McKenna for the state of Washington. We have many press conferences coming up in November and December and January with his office, as well as Seattle Against Slavery. So I go back to the same question, Sarah, in the beginning. How important are collaborations? And when you see an epidemic of this magnitude, obviously not one agency can combat it alone.
Absolutely not. I think you're absolutely right, and I think the involvement of Soroptimists here in the U.S. and internationally is, you know, incredibly integral to the work that we're doing, and similar organizations that are fighting different types of violence against women, different types of labor violations, different types of child labor. All of this is integral to the work that we do. Here in the United States, you know, we've seen this issue grow and grow and grow. So there's more individuals being trafficked, but there are also more and more people who are recognizing what human trafficking means and what they can do to fight it. I think that there's a fantastic documentary that will be coming out in January. It will premiere in December at the International Forum Against Human Trafficking in Luxor, Egypt. It's called Not My Life, and it's a documentary about slavery around the world. And I think using tools like this, using the media, you know, really digging in and making sure that people are looking, as Lori and Sharon and Alice all mentioned earlier, at whether or not the people that we're talking about have a choice, and the majority of them don't, and they're being forced to do this. And we need everybody's voice to contribute. We need people calling the hotline to report what they see. We need students, you know, having groups, starting clubs, getting the word out there. We need all different types of organizations, you know, working together to fight this. And then we need service providers to serve the individuals and to help people rebuild their lives. We need legislators to be putting up the laws that we need to prosecute traffickers, to prosecute pimps. But it's everything is a collaborative effort, and that's the only way that it'll work.
Definitely. And you mentioned early on also about some documentaries and movies, Invite Your Friends Over. We have signed on with the folks over at Call and Response. You can watch that. If you're up at 6 a.m. tomorrow morning, you can tune in to our friends over at Lifetime Television for the movie Human Trafficking. And then for those of you in the greater Portland area, tomorrow night at 11 p.m., Coin 6, Amy Frazier speaks with traffic survivor Dawn Schiller. She survived Porn King John Holmes, and you'll be able to hear her journey if you tune into CBS if you live in the greater Portland area, or we will have the soundbite on our website at nwcat.org following the airing of that. We have a few minutes left. I'd like to go around. Any last thoughts? Lori, let's start with you. Any last thoughts that you can leave our listeners with?
I think I'd just reiterate what I was saying earlier, that I feel like to really change this issue in the matter of sex trafficking is really to change our attitudes about the way that we view women and girls. And I think that we all need to do this. We need to be more aware of the images that we see in the media every day about how women and girls' bodies are used to sell products. And that's just the start. You know, it's the start to respecting women and girls and not thinking that they are something that we can buy and sell, and that we need to fight for that here in the United States and all over the world.
Definitely. Sharon, any last thoughts?
Well, I think to summarize, prevention is better than a cure. So if we can prevent it from happening in the first place by working on the poverty, the education, the cultural aspects of it, we've talked a lot about laws on the books. I think advocacy in enforcing those laws, there's a lot of laws that reside on a lot of books that are not enforced for many different reasons. Sometimes research is required in order to provide the evidence of the true cost of this issue. The organized crime aspect of it is frightening, because as the problem grows, the more the criminal aspect of it is growing also and oozing into our communities. So prevention is clearly the best option.
Definitely. And I love that quote. If you don't mind, I'll use it on Facebook.
Okay.
Okay. Alice, any last thoughts?
Yes, just to piggyback on what Sharon said so beautifully about prevention is better than a cure, we really need to be looking in our own backyards. We have young middle school girls, 11 through 13, who are being lured into prostitution very innocently. And the people who are doing the trafficking are experts at picking out who these young girls are. And they're not just runaways. They can go into malls, they'll hang out at malls, they'll hang out at schools, and they know exactly what to look for, and they know exactly what to say to these young girls. And before they know it, they're sucked into this whole life. And once they're in, it's so difficult to get out, because they're threatened if they go to their parents. They're threatened if they call the police. And I think we just need to be aware it's happening in our own backyards. And the more awareness that we can provide to parents, to schools, to educators, that's one way to put an end to all of this.
Definitely, definitely. Sarah, any last thoughts for our listeners?
Absolutely. I mean, we really need everyone who's listening to be our eyes and our ears on the ground. Please call the hotline, the National Human Trafficking Resource Center. Again, the number is 1-888-373-7888. I think that, you know, if everybody can take a step back and really think about what it means when we say the phrase modern-day slavery, and really, you know, be aware of the issue, be engaged, find out where you can plug in and what you can do. Maybe you can volunteer, maybe you can raise money, maybe you can do a clothing drive. There is a role for everyone to play in fighting slavery. Just to give you a sense of, you know, different types of folks that have called into the hotline and given us valuable information that led to victims of trafficking, you know, being helped and being assisted. We've had calls from taxi drivers, from school resource officers, from the cable guy, from legislators, from neighbors who've seen something happening, you know, in the house next door, the house down the street. Anybody can see trafficking, and anybody can call, and just don't hesitate. So, you know, call us for resources, call us to get educated, but I think the biggest thing that everyone can do is to be engaged and be willing to change the paradigm of the way that we look at the commodification of women and girls, of labor, and of a lot of different pieces to this puzzle, and really stand up and fight back.
I definitely support that, and I support all of you. Thank you so very much to all of you for being with us this evening and our listeners as well. Our next show is next Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific time, with Seattle attorney Ann Bremner, who just was voted one out of the top 10 attorneys in the United States. So join us on November 10th. And I leave you with this. What will you do this week to make a difference? Can you be the change you wish to see in the world? Everybody has the opportunity of being a voice for justice. So thank you, everyone, for joining us. Good night. And ladies, keep up the great work. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
My soul.